The reason that I'm going to wake up personally at 3 a.m. this morning and think, but why did he design us to have PTSD? That's what I'd like to get the answer to.
We think that is what allows us neuroplasticity. I know, like, even as we're watching like development of our kids, but I'm also reliving some of my own struggles and perhaps traumas. I'll be thinking at night, like, why is it that this thing continues to come up for me? Like, I clearly have not resolved this issue the way I thought I did. And so what about it do I need to unpack here?
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. And this is part two of our interview with Dr. Matthew and Brianna Christian, and they're the parents of Isaac. And this was a long episode, so the way it naturally flowed, we broke it up into two parts. We were talking about their son Isaac and everything that he's gone through, and now the second episode is going to be about their journey as parents and the trauma involved and what they've done to work on their own traumas before even being married, as they're being married, and trying to raise Isaac. And it hits home for basically every parent with a child with special needs, because we all have issues we deal with. And for as bad as situations are, there's usually someone else out there in worse shape. And in my mind, the Christians with Isaac, it's about as bad as it gets. And that's not to compare anything, but the whole point of this is I want to let everyone know that this is going to be a great show for all parents of kids with needs, and they all need to listen.
We've acknowledged we have some probably PTSD from situations with Isaac. Yeah. And so it was like 3.5 months. I was nervous, like nervous wreck. I had to ask. I was like, this is okay. We're okay. And it wasn't anything in Elijah, I realized, that triggered it. Or maybe it would be like one primitive reflex I would see, and then I would like
panic.
It was panicked. And, you know, I'm a postpartum mother, so it's unfortunately normal for us to really hang on to things. And then I noticed the same thing happened again when Elijah was around 9 months. Mm. I had a second really, like, unfortunate, like, just, I was like, why am I so anxious all the time? And I realized, oh, because this is when Isaac was hospitalized. Like, that's why I'm like, I'm so concerned about his weight. And I was like, Matthew was like, he's fine. He's chubby. And I was like, yeah, but like, he's not eating. And he's like, no, but he is.
But he is. Yeah. And it's difficult, especially because, as an aside, I think we really like super fat babies in the US, and we want them to be big, but our family, you weren't particularly large and you were little just from falling the percentiles. And I don't expect Elijah to be either, but when you forget about that and you look at, oh, well, he needs to be this like 50th percentile. No, he doesn't. That's 50%. That's half of the kids are like that. Not all of them. Right. So just reminding ourselves over and over that this is okay. He's tracking. He's fine. For me, the big trigger for talking about them, because it is the car of all places. Because when Isaac was little, he would scream in his car seat because he was hungry at the end of the day when I would go to pick up Brian from work when I was around. And when Elijah will cry because he's a baby, it is really hard for me because I get this feeling like, oh my gosh, like, this is, it's not that I'm worried about him per se. It's that it takes me back to that feeling of we're not safe anymore. Yeah. And that's where that it is very anxiety inducing. And it's like calm, everything's fine. Yeah. We're fine.
Like, we use a lot of Sofregio frequencies.
We have been using a lot of those. And that it just for me more than anything. Yeah. And it really is difficult when you go back to that time of the diagnostic and just lifetime uncertainty. I mean, at the time when this was happening with Isaac, we thought they told us he was going to die. Like, that was the conversation. Yeah. And so there's so much wrapped up in a simple child crying in the back seat that we know he's fine. They're kids. Yeah. They cry. That's what they do. It's fine. But moving to a place where we can acknowledge that is really hard. And the only reason I can even handle it is because Ron is with me in the car, and he reminds me, she's like, he's okay. and like, okay, he's okay. And then I do the same thing, like for his weight or whatever, like he's okay, as he is, he's fine, he's chubby and doing all the things.
So essentially, like being there for each other and also having that like calm for the other person throughout each situation that we find is our trigger is it's so much, it's so helpful and so much grace that we need to have in our relationship. And also,
cannot imagine.
There's this thing we instituted when Isaac first got sick and we still use it. We call them no judgment comments, where we say that and then say what's on our mind, because if you keep the anxiety or the feeling or the fear locked up and you don't voice it, then the very obvious, very logical explanation that you know you're going to hear from the other person doesn't get said out loud.
Right.
And then you spiral downwards. And so say something as silly as, I'm worried about Elijah and this is why. And I'll say, okay, well, let's look at that together and we'll talk about the problem. And like he's eating well, he's very little and he's still working on putting food in his mouth because that's what babies do. Like it's simple stuff. And he's like, yeah, you're right. And then for me, it's like, he's really crying. Is he okay? He's like, yeah, he's a baby. That's what they do.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah. But if we don't say these things out loud, then it's really easy to shrink away from each other because you feel shame that you're worried, but you also are concerned and then you get guilt from it. It sounds so silly, but it spirals so fast. And the days that we're not doing well is the days that I'm at the hospital long and I get home and don't see them. And then like the next day, we're like, why do we both feel so weird? It's like, because we didn't get a chance to talk about anything with the kids.
I think that everyone needs to rewind that. And I think Lauren's got to listen to. Like, that brings up a really good point about, like, even what we talked about earlier today. So Lauren decided that she wanted to tell her story of what happened with us. Finally tell it on the podcast. And it sucked. I'm not going to lie. But it was good. And at one point we talked about the same thing. Like, there was never anything coming out of our mouths about like getting divorced or ending a marriage or drastic measures or anything like that. It was, okay, this is pretty much the most awful thing we're going to face for a while. So what do we have to do to up our game in terms of communication? And it was basically that: maximum truth, maximum courageousness, and let it rip. And then I think I'm going to take that no judgment comment from you guys, because we would basically say like, permission to speak freely.
Well, yeah, because you guys understand. And I mean, this is really what attracted me to your practice, is that you guys understand what it's like to be in a situation where you know so much, but then it's your kid.
Yes.
And the knowledge that you had, the like everything you did, like you can't fix you've reached the limits, but then you're still living your life and you still have your other person. And like, you've gone through you go through this huge trauma. And like, as Christians, you're like, we're going to get through this, but how are we going to get through that?
About that.
Yeah.
Because it not only challenges the relationship, it challenges your faith too. And we had to get much deeper than we ever talked about all of it to figure out how we can not justify, but how to reconcile everything. It took us, we're still working on it, but I think that's life in general is part of that. But we do have faith that, you know, Christ is helping to cure him. And that's, the two of us talked about this. We both see a future where Isaac is not sick for some reason. And I think probably because it's true. And I see that. And I think that, like we talked about way earlier, that came from just that kernel of hope that came from finding that you had this, you told us that you can make things better. You didn't say you can cure him. You just said, oh, I think I can get his vestibular reflex back. And you did.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, this is not a death sentence. This is there's hope that something can change. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I'm not going to stop until we can say we did everything we could within reason to get him there. And when we look at, oh man, there's no judgment. I want to come back for a second, because one thing that I've noticed in with our relationship and others too, but sometimes, you know, you get into like a weird argument about something stupid and you're like, why are they mad at me about something so dumb? And then you realize, well, it probably has something to do with, it brings us all the way back to the original trauma, which was what's happened with Elijah or Isaac today that is bringing us back to a place of fear and putting us back in an anxious place. And like, it's easy to get defensive and want to be mad at your partner for their being upset about something. And you realize whatever they're upset about probably isn't the thing. It's more likely that we're going back to the original trauma and we can't process it enough to recognize that's the problem. And so having grace for the other person and just saying like, it's okay. And even apologizing to them for being mad at them, because I've done that. Like, why? Like, I'm sorry I was frustrated with the fact that you're upset about this thing that really isn't related to the, like, we both realize, no, it's because there's something with the kids that pushed us to a place of fear again, but it doesn't always manifest as I'm worried about X. Like, sometimes you can't voice it and then you're upset that it doesn't seem like it's relevant, and they're not mad at you. They're mad at the situation and the fear of before. And then it finally comes out as we discuss it, like, oh, today he was screaming in the back seat. And it really pushed my mind over the edge. And I didn't even know that was the problem.
Right. Yeah.
And then you apologize for going that position. And, you know, we talk through it again. But it's really easy to forget that we're still humans. And I don't know, there's a lot going on.
Well, yeah. For a solid 2 years or more, you were living in your limbic lobes. I mean, limbic system, sorry, entirely. You have every reason to be like that. And then top that off with the daily tasks of trying to take care of Isaac, now Elijah, every reason to have that happen.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that I'm going to wake up personally at 3 a.m. this morning and think, but why did he design us to have PTSD? That's what I'd like to get the answer to. I'll never get it.
No,
we've talked about this. Actually.
We think that is what allows us neuroplasticity, I love Dr. Huberman. So like, I don't know, I think he might have mentioned some of this, but I honestly think the reason we have PTSD is because we need to revisit our programming and we need to learn how to rewire ourselves. And there is a reason you're going back to that. And it could be part of that primitive reflex. Like, why do kids go through leaps and they have to revisit a previous season? Like, they have to like rewire something. Like, I know, like, even as we're watching like development of our kids, but I'm also reliving some of my own struggles and perhaps traumas. And I'm like, okay, when we're in that moment, and let's say I have that conversation with Matthew, I'll be thinking at night, like, why is it that this thing continues to come up for me? Like, I clearly have not resolved this issue the way I thought I did. And so what about it do I need to unpack here? Like, and to relate it to our faith, and like, what is the purpose that God has put this in my heart for and in my mind for? And what am I needing? Like, do I need to be serving somebody with this knowledge that I'm going through, or like my situation? Do I need to be revisiting how I relate to others because of this situation? Or I don't know, do I need to just rewire how my practices are, like, you know, your daily movements, your daily like thought processes, like what needs to be rewired so that we can heal from that situation and create that neuroplasticity? And I think in understanding that, it's everything that you teach, it's everything that you go through as a functional neurologist, where you're talking about the primitive reflexes, you're talking about using red light therapy, you talk about the exercises, and you know, adjustments as a chiropractor, and like, you know, the vibration therapy, like everything that you do, that's what it is. You know?
Working to reprogram some of those pathways and get things back to a place where they can start. Because one of the things that we hear a lot is once you become a certain age, your brain can't change. Like, its neuroplasticity is gone. And I think that's complete bupkis, because you look at how, if that's true, I can't learn as an adult. That's ridiculous. But clearly I can. And I don't think it's fair to put these kids in a box and say they don't have neuroplasticity. But then when you relate it to just the neurotypical mind, like the limbic system took over because we were in a position where we thought we felt like we were going to die.
It was working
to save us. It was to save us. But when you go on the back end of that, why do we revisit? Why is PTSD a thing? And then I started thinking, at least in our situation, it helped us to, we talk about those things.
Yeah.
And when we have, when we go back to that space, sometimes it takes a while for us to get there. We're able to discuss that and rethink some of those experiences that we had, and it reframes the experience itself too.
Yes.
Because now we view the experiences different than we did when we were there.
Right.
I'm not saying they're happy experiences per se, but we see them with a different lens, a different perspective that gives us new insight.
Yeah.
The danger, I think, in the limbic system and PTSD, because it's a real thing. Don't have the support to help work through it, it can be very dangerous because it's such an intense area of the mind that we don't really understand that if it's visited in the wrong way, or there's no one there to help you kind of process it, it spirals you. And we've been there together too.
Yeah.
So
there's a reason 22 veterans take their lives every day because of it.
Yeah. And which is something so near and dear to our hearts as
military members. And members, I think that's, and I guess my point in all this, other than the fact that there is a place for it, is recognizing that sometimes you can't process it alone.
You should not process it alone. That's the thing that we actually have been talking about this week, is that one of the key drivers for us in healing and having this opportunity to heal was like the therapy center that Isaac goes to now is like incredible. It is a place of healing.
Yeah.
Like the fact that I can take my second child while my older son is like getting his therapy is amazing. And like the fact that we took Elijah when we went to see you, it's like we are healing as a family because we have now a community around us and we have people around us who are like allowing us to heal with Isaac.
Yeah.
And that is, again, is not possible alone. Like if I were just doing these exercises alone or doing things at my home that you told us, I don't think we would get near the level of healing that we can get when we are with you, when we're in a place where it's a community, like it feels like a community, it feels like a safe place.
Yeah.
And we are able to kind of as a family heal from
not just Isaac's condition, but also our ability to process everything like that happened.
What just happened to
us. Full disclosure, and I'll say it here, like I was struggling when I got to residency.
Yeah.
I was struggling. It was not good. Like it was hard because there was so much happening. And eventually I reached out to the psychiatry department there and I talked to somebody, and it allowed us to have a conversation in a safe space to process all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that I was equipped to come home and also be in a position to have a conversation and not let that spiral me. And so I will say this to anyone else who's listening. If you're in that position, there are people there whose job it is to have these conversations in a safe space, who know how to address them in a way that doesn't push your mind in a dangerous place. And if that's something you need, then go get the help, because it made a massive difference.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the turning point.
It was
before
huge.
All of this stuff with Dr. Alex and everything, for me, was recognizing like, I'm not coping well, because residency is not easy.
Yeah.
And then all of this other stuff, like I'm not coping well and this is not good. And if I'm not able to be like fully present in my own mind for my family, then we're not going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to do something, and that was getting help before it became a problem. Which I'm glad I did, because now we can have these conversations, and thank God for that.
Yeah.
Like that was big. And so I would encourage anyone who's thinking, well, I don't have a support system. Maybe I don't have people like at my therapy center or anything like this. Like, well, if you can find a professional that can help too, if it's available to you, and there are resources, especially for the military, there are resources for the military as well. If anyone in the military is listening, Military One Source, Fleet and Family Center, there are systems in place for family members there. And then civilian wise, I'm sorry, I don't have as much of a good understanding of the system, but I know that there are people who are willing to help, and there are resources available in most communities. And I would say reach out to those, because if you don't have a safe, in churches as well, if you don't have a safe framework to process this stuff, it gets dicey.
Yeah.
It gets dicey fast.
You can't do it yourself.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah.
So something that, and so you guys bring up a good point, and I'm not letting the cat out of the bag per se, but we don't know how we're going to do it, but we know how we're going to start. And one thing that we're going to do, and we had this epiphany after you guys left, and it was partially inspired by you guys, because Lauren was laughing at how much Matt likes the Blue Tunnel on NeuroSage.
So much fun.
And so we were talking, we're in Atlanta doing some continuing ed, and we're like, I had this epiphany and I wrote it down, and I was like, I think that maybe not all families are ready, but I think we should basically hire your family at the same time. So what we can start with, and something that we can do, and something we would do with you guys next time you're around, is we would run assessments on you two and Elijah. And a lot of research in the world of holistic arts or healing is coming down to concepts of frequencies, wavelengths, just energy.
Yes.
So if we need to have that kid heal as much as possible, we need the family on the same wavelength.
Yes.
So let's start buttoning up the brains of mom and dad too. Yes. And
that's like, you are onto something huge, and we both are like nodding our heads like, yeah, that's definitely what it takes.
And later on, you know, give it years down the road, there needs to be other providers. We need to have other people with other training and perspectives, but we can start with the brain and then, you know, go into other things. But that was partially inspired by you guys, because I was like, well, we should just do that, because part of the process of being a patient and doing this type of work with like Isaac is, God forbid, let's say there's a family out there who has a son like Elijah. There's a lot of, or a son like Isaac who has a lot of needs. And let's just say one of the parents are just, they're not in a good spot, and they're not ready to move forward and take steps like you guys have had. Then how much better is that kid really going to get if he comes to town for a week? Probably not that good.
No.
But we could somehow have a conversation with that parent and say, hey, I can tell you're not ready, but part of the plan is to work with you too. So if you want to start getting on the same wavelength to help your son or your daughter, whatever it is, then this is what we'd like to offer. Because there's plenty of families that someone's just not ready, mom or dad, or maybe the kid, maybe siblings are obstructing things. And if we can get rid of that obstruction somehow by introducing care to everyone, then it'd be kind of cool. Anyway,
I totally agree. We feel that like what you're saying just resonates so well in what my understanding has been in our journey and healing. I definitely had to do so much work on myself, and we've been really blessed where I've been able to stay home with the kids. And even though it's sometimes a little hard to be alone all the time, we're lucky because I go to Isaac's appointments and we take him to acupuncture, and I talk with everybody, which I apologize to all of them because they've become my therapists in some ways. But I have to talk through like what I'm seeing and what I'm visualizing with Isaac as we're going through, and being able to say like, this is what's happening, and reason through it allows me to like revisit pieces of our past with Isaac to say like, this was not my fault. And then I can say like, okay, this is not my fault. I'm not such a bad mom. I'm not such a bad parent that like, I don't deserve Elijah, or like that I will hurt Elijah in some way, because unfortunately a lot of the way I was spoken to and treated as we were going through our journey with Isaac was as if I had caused every delay and every problem. And then like, it kept being like, so what are you doing?
Right.
What have you done to cause this? And so I internalized so much of Isaac's disease where I was like, I am the cause of all of his struggles. And I alone created all of the problems. And so when he is really sick or when he's upset, I'm like, this is my fault. This is my fault. And when we, it's a lot as a mom.
I don't think I knew that.
You probably don't. I'm really good at hiding things.
I mean, we've discussed a lot, which has been awesome, but I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
That's one of the ongoing struggles.
It's my ongoing struggle. Yeah.
Even intellectually understanding this isn't your fault. That is a conversation we have at least once a week. One of the things we're dealing with.
I'm still working on it.
It's so deeply ingrained.
Moms
are responsible for everything.
Yeah.
According to the system.
Right.
And it's unfair to put that much pressure on people. But the way, and I guess this is a nice warning for people who work with families, is just be cognizant of the way you present the questions and how you're asking about the child, because we all have concern for a kid. There's no question that's what we're worried about. But the way the questions are brought up makes it sound like clearly this is your fault, because like, oh, do you put him on tummy time ever? Well, of course. Or like, oh, do you feed him? That was a question that we got in the hospital. Do you feed your child?
Yeah.
Like, yes.
We're two well-educated medical professionals, and now we
right. But there's this feeling of, are you sure? You know, like, and so just the way that that's brought up makes you feel defensive, as opposed to being. It wasn't a collegial, let's get this kid better together. It was, let's defend what we've done at this point to show that we're doing our best and it wasn't our fault. Yeah. And that makes you on the defensive for every new encounter with every new person. You feel like, okay, now I have to make sure that we discuss all things we're doing and they know that our plan is this and this is how we've been following through. Because if you don't feel like you presented that well enough, you wonder if they're really listening to what you're saying, because they're just thinking, well, this is a bad parent.
Yes.
And it makes it hard to do things.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, just with the whole situation of us being diagnosed at the same time as COVID, we recognize that everybody went into that fight or flight, blame, like, and it's nobody's fault. I don't want people to think like I have negative
we don't blame anybody
towards,
for that.
Yeah, the medical professionals that care for us, because I know they were doing their best with what they had, and they were all really good people.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, in that season of life, I was in this like super emotionally vulnerable. Like, I was so vulnerable. I couldn't form sentences correctly. Like, I sounded and felt like a small child, like just clinging to my baby, like, please somebody help me here. And it was not the great season for them to like kind of point their finger at me like, you did this. This is your fault. Like, why are you still allowed to parent? And so it was, anyway, it's been a whole healing journey. Kind of started to like derail that, but it's been a whole healing journey for me to realize like I did the best I could with the resources I had around me at that time. And as Isaac was developing, and I took him to all the doctors. I was doing my best. I was working full time. I was nursing him.
We were also reassured everything was fine.
Yeah.
A lot. And so we didn't want to be the crazy parents that
were
like insisting like weirdos, but we're like, are you sure he's okay? Because he really doesn't look okay. And there's one thing I'll add to all that, because when you're in that really difficult time where you're still working through the diagnosis process and mom is being questioned like that.
Yeah.
As dad, it puts you in a place where you get very defensive, because I wanted my wife to understand that I didn't blame her. That's not her fault in my mind. And it's not her fault either in general. Yeah. But for me, for her to understand how I felt, this is not your fault. Like, clearly you're doing a great job. But a lot of times we get this is one of those few times where we have a lot of feeling, a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
And the emotion that comes out from a loving place sometimes comes out very aggressively.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to tell her how much I love her and she's doing a great job. And you're doing a great job, but you come out with like a pressured speech and your tone goes up and you have more volume at a time when you have a person who's shrinking and is trying to pull her baby in. And like, I learned a lot about how I deliver my loving statements. And like, I'm trying to convince her that it wasn't her fault. But in doing so, I actually pushed her away a little bit at the beginning. And that was difficult too for us to work through, because I was like, why is she not like understanding how much? And then I realized, well, because the way that you're speaking to her is making her feel like you're like fighting, or you're going to go fight her or something. Like that's not the way to do it. And that was an interesting piece. And one other thing I'll add is for dads or spouses, other spouses with the kids, like mom is going to pull that baby in and get very protective.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean she doesn't trust you. It just means she doesn't trust anybody, even herself right now.
Yes.
And I took that very personally. For a while. Remember that? Yeah. I was just why don't you trust me? Like, I'm bad too. I'm part of this. But then I realized, no. We were so lost and worried. And like, this is your baby. Like, it's not that she doesn't trust you. She doesn't trust yourself. And it's not, it'll be okay. Just give the space that needs to be there and continue to support. But it took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Fair.
No, definitely. Yeah.
I still get intense with my love. Sometimes I'm like, no, you're doing a great job. She's like, okay, I'm like, thanks.
Now come back down to my level. Thanks.
Yeah. But still a lot.
That
is such, God, that's amazing. That is such good points. Like, I guess, so I'm at a bit of a loss for words, because the thing is I didn't realize all that you guys had gone through. I mean, it's an awful situation, but I never sat down and thought, I wonder what they've really gone through. Or all my other patients who have had, or parents and patients with genetic issues. Because these are, no doubt, now someone's going to be listening to this, and they're going to be like, yeah, that's me. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's hard too, because I recognize that when I probably was talking to you too, my brain, because I've been in this like caregiver, I'm like Isaac's nurse, like his nurse and caregiver, but I'm also his mother. And so when I'm talking with other medical professionals, I revert almost to like that like left brain, like this is the way, these are the things, like I tick my boxes as I'm talking to you, and yep. I'm trying to like,
she's moving clinically.
I have to move clinically in my mind and like be what, you know, you would expect the nurse to tell you.
Yeah.
And I don't give myself the chance most times to like go over to the mom side enough. And so I exhaust myself clinically pretty often, because going to the emotional side is,
it's more work sometimes to deal it's emotionally.
Heavy. It's so, I mean, it's heavy.
The progress isn't the same there.
And you can't, like, yes, you need both to move forward, but sometimes you can't just unload both together, because it's
too much.
It comes out. Yeah. It comes out too much. So I think being able to rationalize and talk through it as a nurse allows me the chance to like breathe, pause, and then feel. And like when you work on Isaac as you're doing it in the clinic, I'm sure you don't recognize it, but I'm actually feeling during those times. Like we're talking, like we were all talking while you were working on Isaac, which meant that I could take a final, like I could finally sit back and stop being his nurse for a moment, and I could be his mom, and I can like process everything that's going on, and I'm not having to be the one always doing the hands-on, the like trying to heal my child, but I can be like, okay, I'm gonna let somebody else like I trust actually put their hands on my kid and try to heal my kid, so that I can have a moment to like be mom, be myself, and like re-regulate a little bit, which
You have to give your space for that.
Yeah.
And it happens in spurts. It doesn't, this is something I learned. Just because we came to a conclusion that was valid about how this isn't our fault and we're moving in the right direction, it doesn't mean you've closed the book on the conversation. It just means that we feel better right now.
Yeah.
It will continue to come up and we'll in new ways, because that's life. And like, as we learn, as we process these pieces, like she's talking about, when she gets to move to the being mom again, new things come out that we hadn't had a chance to process. And so we revisit them and we process them again. And it's having grace is like, if there's any advice anywhere, it's just have grace and forgive and say, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And just let things go, because
you're going to feel slighted that you were holding the baby back and didn't want me to touch more. You're going to be slighted that like you didn't respond to my encouraging message of intensity, but all of that's okay. It's all okay. Like just give grace to the other person. I understand that you're both really hurting. You both really don't have the ability to control any of your emotions. No. Like the prefrontal cortex is like, I don't think he's like, I don't think it matters anymore. Goodbye. You know, your inhibitions is like, it's you say things you don't mean and you respond in ways that seem inappropriately intense because it is. And just recognize that you're both really moving through. And I'll say this too, is the ability to look at it clinically, which is ingrained in us because that's our job. It's okay to talk about the situation from a clinical, almost like sterile position where you're saying, this is this, these are the facts of the case. This is what's going on. Here's where we're at. It's difficult to talk about, but this is the level. And you're not speaking death over the situation or not showing hope by saying how the situation currently is. You're allowed to tell it as it is and still have hope for a future. Yes. Like it's not a bad thing to say. He can't move his head still.
Yeah.
He still can't walk. Yeah. He's not able to push up on his chest. That's all okay because it's all true. It doesn't mean I don't have hope that he will in the future. And it's not, I'm not speaking death into his ability to do those things. Sometimes at the beginning, I did too. I wouldn't want to talk about any of the negative stuff because, like, well, then it's not being positive. But then you're not giving you an opportunity to process the truth and what's actually happening. So you have to address it as it is and say, this is what's going on. It's not great. And then move forward and say that, but that doesn't mean that we're going to stay here. I think is the hard part. And that took, again, it's still, I'm still working through
it. I think we're still.
Yeah. I don't think I'm there yet.
That's the thing. It's like, I mean, are any of us perfect or are we all just beings working towards healing ourselves and those around us? And I think you feel this too, where it's like you're in that position where you're a healer as a medical professional. And so there's sometimes this assumption that you don't have any of your, like any flaws or problems, or you would be complete, like you are completely without any other symptoms yourself. And like, I think I'll speak for myself. It's like, we know we have our own things going. And sometimes we're like, we're really good at, we, because we know the system, we're really almost better at hiding it. Or we like learn little measures to like tweak ourselves so nobody recognizes per se what we're dealing with. Doesn't mean it's not there. It just means that we're gonna have to take more time on the back end to take care of ourselves, and we're gonna have to give ourselves more grace, recognizing that in order for us to perform in a healing manner in our position and doing what we're, you know, so passionate about, it means that at the end of the day, we're going to have to take even longer time to make sure to check in with ourselves and do the work on ourselves so that we can show up, you know, for the next round.
Yeah.
Yeah. That brings up a really good point for everyone listening is whenever you go to any provider, they're people. They have issues, and it doesn't matter what the initials are after that person's name or whatever it is. They're a person, and don't think for a second they don't have their deaths in the family. They don't have people in their family with special needs. It doesn't have to be an channel deficiency issue. Getting ready to say, their new kids are born with autism. It can be other traumas, and it can just be that person is a person, and it can be amazing when they're standing in front of that patient. But after that, it can be, their lives could be a mess. Absolutely. Yes. It's just a really good job.
Yeah.
We had one of the providers early was very dismissive of Isaac's symptoms, and we were very frustrated by that. And it took us about a year to recognize that that person was having a lot of issues in their own life too, that were really big. Yeah. And I think that's on the podcast actually. You talk about it.
I do. We were able to forgive. Instagram post about it.
Because we're cool kids now.
It's Isaac's neurologist. And again, like it's just, I feel like it was one of the most powerful posts I did for me.
Yeah.
But it was a lesson for me that I needed also just to say, like, forgiveness is so important for you as the, like, the patient, for the provider, and just like for everybody.
And for you, and if you're the caregiver, to be able to move forward. Because if you harbor resentment, it's really easy to harbor resentment.
It's so easy.
And one of the, it changed our approach to, like, it's a practice, like you said, and it's not perfect, and people will make mistakes, and they're gonna not hear what you said, or, you know, they're gonna not put the prior auth in multiple times, which is TRICARE, it's a whole thing. But but it's, people are trying to help, and people are doing their best, and sometimes their best changes. Sometimes the best is not as good as it was yesterday, but it'll come back. And just give people space to be people.
Yes.
And you'll find that you're not as stressed out and angry, because we were really frustrated and angry with the system and with people at first. And we looked at each other one day and we're like, what is going on? Like, why are we like this? And we realize this because we're harboring so much anger, not necessarily at any individual person. The situation itself does that too.
Yeah.
But it's easy to assign that frustration to a person and then just dump on them, which thankfully never did, like, speaking, but like in our minds, we did it. Our hearts, we did it. And your heart, you can feel it sour. And so one of the things that we said after around that time is like, all right, we either get better or we get bitter. And we can't be bitter because it'll end everything about who we are as people. And
we refuse to be bitter people. We refuse to be, like, we're not coming out of this angry. I refuse to let this make us angry. I refuse to let this make me somebody I'm not. And so, yeah, our situation is rough. Yeah, like, there are days where we're, like, you know, up at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and you're just like, you're exhausted, you're angry at the world, you're angry at everything around you, because you're like, why is this happening to me? Like, what have I done? But you recognize in those, like, really awful moments, usually, like, the next morning, and you're like, okay, so I need to not be bitter about this whole, like, something is here to make me better. I need to
move forward.
I need to move forward.
And we're taught for some reason, and it's nobody's fault, but it seems that there's this culture almost in the special needs parents, like, sphere, that if you're not appropriately mad about the treatment of your child, then you're not caring enough about them. And I disagree wholeheartedly with that sentiment. I think you can care deeply about the care of your child and also not harbor, like, significant anger or resentment with the system, because it's very easy to be like the tiger parents or like whatever, you know, really fight for them. But
you still fight, but you learn more to fight with grace and with compassion at the same time, like, recognizing that
we're all on the same team.
We are on the same team. And also, sorry, not to tie this back again, but, like, the healthcare system isn't God. So
it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we can't assign it on this assumption of perfection that it doesn't have, unfortunately. And same with healthcare providers in general. Like, we speak your praises at, you know, at length, but I recognize you're not God. Like, you don't hold the final say. Like, you and Dr. Lauren are incredibly compassionate and, you know, so wonderful in what you do. Sorry. But that doesn't make you ultimately God. So if my kid comes back from an intensive and he's not fully healed, it's not you. Like, I can't, I'm not mad at you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that would never be the situation. It's, we are so grateful for everybody that shows up and does their best with us, but we also ultimately recognize that it's, you're not, you know, you're not God. You're not gonna, like, be perfect. You're gonna be a human, and you're gonna do the best you can as a human with the tools that you have. And that's, yeah. And that's that. I don't know if that's.
No, I agree.
I guess Elijah thinks it's time to go.
Yeah. Sorry.
He doesn't like waking up, which is fair, because I don't like waking up either. I can't blame him.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, Well, I guess unless there's anything else you guys want to say, I just first and foremost, I kind of selfishly wanted to have you guys on because Lauren and I enjoy having you guys around. And for everyone that kind of full transparency, I mean, we enjoy the Christians so much. We had them at our house. They came over for dinner and we hung out. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. It was great. So
we definitely wish we could be moving to Kansas City after that, which was Dr. Lauren really sold it for me. And I was like, so
the Navy doesn't have any presence there.
So put weird. A military base in there for us. But yeah,
Leavenworth. No, Leavenworth is the jail. That's Army.
Yeah, yeah. Much Navy requirement there. But
yeah, that's right. We're kind of surrounded by cornfields, not so much ocean.
Yeah. Oh man.
Jeez. Yeah. All right.
Well,
I guess if there's anything else you guys want to say.
We appreciate you letting us chat about it because giving the talk about our not our feelings, but how we process our feelings is something that we want to have an opportunity to talk with you about. Because I did realize we're going to take the baby elsewhere. I realized when we were with you last, we haven't really talked about this facet of things, and this is probably, in all honesty, other than Isaac's disease itself, this is probably the most impactful part of it, is how our lives are affected and how we've worked through it and are working through it together. Because it honestly is the relationship is everything for us. And it's something we don't talk about much because we get so focused on like the healing part, but part of the healing is the family for us. And so,
and it's not to sound hokey, but if you're not on your game, if your guys' wavelengths aren't where they should be, Isaac's isn't going to be, and neither is.
And I'll come home from a long hospital day and she'll be like, hey, your energy is way too intense and a little angry, like why don't you go shower and come back? And then I'm like, oh, you're right, like I have a lot of like built up stuff from the day, and you let it kind of go, and the kids will reflect how we feel whether we want them to or not. And I get tempered more and how I'm coming off, because that will affect them and their ability to be in a good space and be able to heal together and all that. And so I think that's something that my wife has helped me be better about. Our relationship we're hoping to model for them is something that allows them to be free to move forward themselves. So.
Well, seriously, not just saying this, this has been very inspiring. Hearing how you guys work together, and it's really hit home after the conversation we just had in this spot, like, you know, 3 hours ago. I hope people got a lot out of this. This is awesome.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, we really appreciate you.
Yes. Thank you. No, thank you for coming on. The Dr. Alex Show is hosted by myself, a nerd. Dr. Alex Nelson. I'm a chiropractor, board certified in functional neurology and childhood neurodevelopmental disorders. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your other favorite podcast apps. The Dr. Alex Show is a production of Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.